are Locked On Kentucky, your daily podcast on the Kentucky Wildcats. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, what is going on, Big Blue Nation? Welcome on in to Locked On Kentucky, your daily Kentucky Wildcats podcast. I'm your host, Lance Dahl, writer for Sports Illustrated for various SEC-related things. But on this podcast, we take a dive into all things Kentucky athletics. On today's episode of Locked On Kentucky, we are going to be discussing Hunter Dickinson's visit to the Wildcats. How did it go? What are our thoughts on it? Also going to be discussing another transfer portal piece for the Wildcats. Going to be talking about somebody that's actually in conference that may be of interest. And then to wrap up the show, we've got a couple of interesting questions from you guys. One of them is a three-parter. The other one I think is also going to take a little bit of time to dive into. So got some interesting thoughts on what's going on with Dickinson, what's going on with NIL, what's going on with the recent announcement by Pat Forty of Sports Illustrated, actually, I believe, about rushing the field for SEC teams and what that means in the future. We got a lot to unpack here on today's episode of Locked On Kentucky. Thank you so much for making Locked On UK your first listen every single day. Want to remind everybody out there that if you are not subscribed to the show already, you should be. And if you have not yet, please go ahead and do so. If you're listening on podcast, you go ahead and follow right there as well. Got a lot of fun off-season content coming up for you guys. There's no reason why you shouldn't be subscribed. So go ahead and hit that big red button and join the fun. It's going to be a lot of fun here, kind of getting to discuss things with you guys as the off-season continues to roll along. So Hunter Dickinson has officially had his visit with Kentucky, and Tristan Ferris, friend of the program, we've had him on quite a few times. We're probably going to have him on here sometime soon. I know I continue to say that. It's just scheduling just never really aligns with me. I'm kind of all over the place sometimes. But Tristan Ferris, at Tristan UDA on Twitter, he's a writer for Kentucky Insider and a Sea of Blue. If I'm not mistaken, a Sea of Blue as well. Ferris said, and I quote, "I just received feedback on Hunter Dickinson's visit to Kentucky. Things went really well, and Kentucky had a lot of the things he is looking for. I will add that this has been a stressful process for Dickinson, and he's trying to keep things as quiet as possible on his end." And then Tristan replied to himself in the thread and said, "This doesn't mean he will rush into a decision. He still wants to do his due diligence." And if you were watching on YouTube there, you see me put up the air quotes for that. So a couple of things I want to note here about what Ferris had to say about it. First of all, the visit went really well, according to who he knows that's close to the Dickinson situation. And that's great that Kentucky had a visit that ended up going really well. The most interesting thing, I think, about this tweet here from Ferris is the fact that he notes that Kentucky had a lot of the things he is looking for. Now, I don't necessarily know how deep we need to read into this. Is it one of those things where the visit went really well, but in reality it was just kind of eh, relative to maybe his visits to Maryland and Georgetown previously? Is it going to be meh compared to Villanova? And when it comes to a lot of the things, does that genuinely mean Kentucky's got a lot of the things that Dickinson's looking for? Or is it where it's like, well, it's not everything that he's looking for, and he's going to end up saying something like that similarly as this process continues along? Maybe it's not fair to read too deep into it. Maybe on the surface we try and take the positives out of it, which is Kentucky had a lot of the things that he is searching for in his new team that he's going to be joining. I can only assume one of those is playing time. I know that Kentucky does not want to guarantee anything for anybody, especially financially. Kentucky doesn't want to get into a bidding war with anybody, which we're actually going to discuss later on in the show as it relates to Dickinson and just NIL as a whole with the transfer portal. But I think right now, Kentucky, after these conversations that Dickinson's had, after the visit he's had, I think Kentucky fans should feel positive about their stance with Dickinson, about Kentucky's stance with Dickinson. Kyle Tucker of The Athletic said vibes were good on Hunter Dickinson's Kentucky visit, but I've heard all his trips described as poker-faced. Hit Maryland and Georgetown previously, Kansas and Kentucky the last few days, Villanova next, and maybe one more mystery visit. So we wait. And that's the final thing I want to point out here about the Hunter Dickinson situation, is the fact that he, like Tristan said, doesn't want to rush into a decision. He's already taken three visits previously. Kentucky's his fourth. He's going to take a fifth, maybe a sixth, according to Kyle Tucker. We're just going to have to sit and wait for this process to go out. So while today I'm starting the show off talking about it to give you guys an update on it, probably not going to be touching on this a whole lot more unless significant news comes out before he kind of wraps all of his visits up, kind of makes his decision in his mind. I'm going to discuss here later on in the show what Kentucky financially may be committing or not committing to. I can't tell you for certain. I can only speculate. That's later on in the show, though. But for now, I want to keep the topic on the transfer portal because Kentucky, as we have discussed, doesn't just need a transfer portal big man. There are a couple of other spots on their roster that they could fill, especially if Antonio Reeves and Chris Livingston don't come back. And even if only Chris Livingston comes back, you probably still need a backup three or a backup four, depending on how things go. So according to 24/7 Sports, specifically Isaac Trotter of the Cat's Paws, which is the Kentucky website for 24/7, he believes that Vanderbilt guard Tyron Lawrence is one of the best potential landing spots he believes that Kentucky is one of the best potential landing spots for Lawrence. There are a lot of other SEC teams here in this list. Missouri, Auburn, coming back to Vanderbilt may make sense. Georgia, Ole Miss, LSU, and then Kentucky is on there as well. And this is what Trotter had to say about Lawrence before I get into his numbers and things like that. He said, if Antonio Reeves chooses to stay in the NBA draft, Kentucky will be in the market for a veteran guard. Even before Reeves' decision, Kentucky might be on the prowl for another guard after C.J. Frederick opted to transfer to Cincinnati. Lawrence checks off every box for Kentucky, but it could force a tough conversation with some of Kentucky's ballyhooed recruiting class. I'm going to be completely honest with you, Chief. If we're potentially sitting here saying, hey, look, we could get Vanderbilt's Tyron Lawrence, but we're going to have to maybe give up a recruit? No. Respectfully, no. I will take Justin Edwards, and I will take DJ Wagner, and I will take Rob Dillingham and Reed Shepard every day of the week from somebody that played at Vanderbilt. All due respect. Now, Lawrence is a good player. I will give him that. He averaged 13 points, 4.4 rebounds, almost 2 assists while shooting 56% on twos and 36% from three. Very solid numbers. In his three games against Kentucky, he popped off, averaged 17, 5, and 1.3 while shooting 54% from the floor. Every single time this kid played against the Wildcats, he gave him fits. And some really, really tough shots against them as well. He's got some height to him, which is really, really nice as well. Tyron Lawrence would be a good fit. He'd be a good Antonio Reeves replacement. Now, again, I want to ask the question, does this make sense if it's going to make some of Kentucky's current recruits compete with him for playing time or make them want to move away, period? I don't think it does. But it is an opportunity. And again, I want to reiterate, there are several other SEC schools on here that he could make a push for. Auburn, Missouri, LSU, Ole Miss, I think would be a good spot for him. Kansas is on here as well. I think Texas was on here too. So Tyron Lawrence, I don't want to kind of dive too deep into because I don't think that it's a possibility, but it's a name to keep your eye on in case you're a Kentucky fan out there and you want to kind of be aware of the different prospects that Kentucky could get. So that's Tyron Lawrence. That's Hunter Dickinson. If you have thoughts on either of those players, leave it in the YouTube comments below as always. We're going to get to some questions here from you guys about the transfer portal, about what type of basketball Kentucky should be using, about NIL, about SEC, maybe cracking down on field stormings, my thoughts on that. We're going to get to all of that in just a second. Before we do that, though, I want to tell you guys about our friends over at FanDuel. If you did not see the pair of NBA playoff games late last night, I am very upset for you. It was some great, great, great basketball. It was very, very fun. Also, on top of that, MLB, the kickoff to the 2023 season has been phenomenal. It's a great time to be a sports fan, and there's no better time to hook up with FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook. Right now, new customers can step up to the plate with a no-sweat first bet up to $1,000. All you have to do is go to FanDuel.com/LockedOn to sign up. You can place your first bet and get up to $1K back in bonus bets if you don't win. Over unders, props, odds, they've got everything going on over there at FanDuel. You do not want to miss your chance to get a no-sweat first bet up to $1,000 when you join FanDuel today. All you have to do is go to FanDuel.com/LockedOn to sign up. There's no reason why you shouldn't, considering the NBA playoffs are going on, and it is literally the perfect time to sign up with FanDuel. Again, FanDuel.com/LockedOn to sign up. It is FanDuel, the official partner of Major League Baseball and the NBA. All right, continuing along here on the Tuesday edition of Locked On Kentucky, Lance Dahl hanging out here with you. Locked On's NFL mock draft special is here, and it's bigger than ever. All you have to do is follow along on all 32 teams' first pick in a 6-episode ultimate mock draft experience only Locked On can deliver. All episodes are available right now on the Locked On NFL Draft on YouTube or wherever you're listening to your podcast. So if you want to listen to what I had to say about Will Levis, again, Locked On NFL Draft, wherever you get your podcast or on the tube. And then on top of that, if you guys have not listened to the Locked On College Basketball podcast, they are wherever you get your podcasts as well. Would encourage you guys to check them out. So if you've not subscribed to the show already at this point, you should go ahead and do so. I would really appreciate it if you did. I'm really, really pleasantly surprised with all of the people that have joined the channel recently on YouTube and have followed along on podcast as well. I really, really do appreciate everybody out there listening and supporting and asking questions, which is what we're going to get to here. So we've got two people asking questions, one of them asking a three-parter and the other one asking one that I want to take a dive into. Clint Vincent, a longtime listener of the show, says, "Hey, Lance from Peru, God bless you and your work. Remember the K-State coach said all we need to worry about is Oscar. Kansas just offered Hunter Dickinson $4 million over 2 years. Wow. Players shouldn't make that much money or visit schools for money. There needs to be a cap. Also, the NCAA needs to use a universal ball due to playing all year with a Nike ball, and then in the NCAA tournament, they use the Wilson ball. I say bring back the Rawlings ball. Yes, both teams use the same ball, but money, 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 talks, talks, talks. We need Dickinson's Lance Ware demeanor. Thanks, Mr. Dahl. What do you think about universal basketball and the Hunter Dickinson ordeal and money? Appreciate all you do. I have an English class, so I better go. I'll hang up and listen." Really appreciate Clint Vincent listening to the show. He's been listening for quite some time now over here on YouTube, and he's got some interesting questions there about Hunter Dickinson, about the Nike ball that Kentucky uses, and then just about, you know, NIL as a whole. For different things. So I'm going to start with here the cap on transfer portal players. I don't think we're ever going to get to a point where we see a cap on what transfer portal players can be offered in the portal. The reason is I don't think we can forget how we got here. Programs were doing this under the counter for forever. They'll go back to doing things if there's a cap set on how much somebody can offer. And you'll see if this cap were to be put in place that Clint wants to be implemented, you're going to see where in the light a player gets a max offer, but in the dark they're getting offered X amount more. And there's so many ways NIL companies and universities can manipulate this. How do we know that? Well, they've been doing it for years without getting caught, getting decades without getting caught. So there's so many ways around a cap hit on transfer portal offers. So I do agree. I do think it's crazy that certain programs can just pull out the wallet and give it to anybody. I'm not saying it's a negative, awful thing. I'm just saying I think it's wild that that's the time that we live in. But at the same time, again, I don't know if we can put a cap on how much a player can make, especially if the public consensus is that he's worth it. Because there are a lot of different high-profile names out there that are going to end up entering the portal that some people will say, that guy's worth more than the cap hit of $2.5 million. He should be worth this amount to somebody. He should be worth this amount. I guess the other point I'll make about this is Kentucky, specifically, if we're going to talk about how it relates to the Wildcats and Hunter Dickinson, they've been clear through sources that you can read anywhere, they don't want to get into a bidding war. Kentucky does not want to get into a bidding war with anybody, and they don't want to do it for Dickinson. So if they end up getting him, It shows the power that Kentucky has despite not wanting to spend the money other programs do. And it shows the long-term value that this program holds over a place like Kansas, you know, Texas, Syracuse, whatever it may be. There are players that want to come here for the publicity and for the ability to be noticed heading into the NFL draft relative to some of the these other schools, because that's what we're known for. So while some of us may sit here, and I'm not saying I or you do this, some of us may sit here and dog the fact that Kentucky's selling point for what they want to do with recruits and transfer portal players is we can get you to the NBA. It's a valuable selling point because it may, at the end of the day, get you players without having to spend more money than another program. And Kentucky's made it clear, I don't want to do that regardless. So that's my thought on having a cap. And that's my thought on what it has to do with Hunter Dickinson. I think studies have shown for the basketball thing, there are inconsistencies across different basketballs that are used. So you've got the Wilson ball, you've got the Nike ball, you used to have the Rawlings ball. I think Under Armour has a ball, but I don't know if they use it for college. And I'm going to take a similar stance to what I just said about the cap. I don't think we'll ever get to a point in the collegiate game where we have a universal one because of the different partnerships that different companies have with different programs. So Nike programs will use Nike. Under Armour will use Adidas, Under Armour and Adidas will use Wilson. And if you look at the SEC specifically, only three schools, Mississippi State, South Carolina, Auburn, use Wilson. And then every other school except for Texas A&M uses Nike basketballs for their home games. Texas A&M is an Adidas school. They use Adidas basketballs. Kentucky uses a Nike ball. Every other school, again, besides Mississippi State, South Carolina, Auburn, and A&M, they use them. So I think that because they're tethered to the pro or the company that they're currently using for all of their jerseys, all of their merchandise, different things like that, they're going to therefore use the same equipment, i.e. basketballs. So I don't think we're ever going to get to a point where the NCAA is going to have enough power to say, we're all moving to the Wilson ball, we're all moving to the Nike ball, and if you don't like it, you can cry about it. I think that we're never going to get to that point because of the partnerships. So while I do agree with Clint, there are inconsistencies, and it's annoying at times because one team can be shooting really, really well with a Wilson basketball, one team can be shooting really, really poorly with a Nike one, and I can think of a specific school in one particular instance from last season, not this last season, but the 2021-22 season, where there was a team, not going to mention them by name, let's just say they're in the same conference, they were averaging 83 points a game with Wilson basketballs and 71.3 with Nike. It was that stark of a difference. And you may sit here and say, well, you got to coach the kids to be comfortable to both. They do in practice. I've seen it firsthand. They do that. But it doesn't change the fact that they're more comfortable with the balls that they use more often. So I agree that it is frustrating that there are inconsistencies with this. We're not going to get a solution because of partnerships. So that's my answer on that. And then for Dickinson, the whole saga here, I mean, I understand him wanting to take his time. Same thing with Oscar Tshiebwe, man. It's so understandable why in both of their positions you'd want to wait to make the right decision. Explore all of your options, get everything out of the way before you make a life-changing decision. I get it. But if we're giving a prediction here, I think he's going to come to Kansas or Kentucky. I mean, it's one of the two. I think you could potentially see him go to Maryland or Georgetown. I don't think the Villanova thing is going to be as lucrative as a place like Kansas or Kentucky. So while he may end up saying, hey, it's one of my final three schools, I don't think that Villanova is going to get him. So that's my thought on that. And then the final question of today's episode comes from Great Kentuckian. He says, hey, Lance, can you address the possibility of fines being given to fans who rush the field at football games? I just thought it was a bluff or a joke, but from Matt Mitchell's SEC roll calls, but I read some articles saying that fines would be given at $5,000, $25,000, and then $50,000 each time a fan rushes. Even some Florida politicians have set bills where jail time is a possibility. What are your thoughts on this development that could happen as early as this upcoming season? So I personally am, you know, a supporter of, you know, capitalizing on emotion in the moment. Because whenever you look at different things across college football, what makes college football special? This is something that Josh Pate has said a lot. This is something that I think a lot of people that care about the sport would agree on. What makes college football special is actually kind of opposite of what makes college basketball special, which is the fact that every single weekend, excluding the postseason, can be filled with passion and excitement, and it's genuine. And when you have upsets and moments like this where things can happen, where a team storms the field, you know, you want to build up to that point. It's a moment in history. It's special. And while some of us may sit here and say, as Kentucky basketball fans, we see those moments in the regular season as well. But I don't think you can sit here and argue against the fact that most moments that you remember the 2023 season for most teams in the NCAA tournament will be capitalized or will be ended with what happened in the NCAA tournament. Most things that we're going to think about this past basketball season are going to be things that happened in the postseason. With college football, I don't think you think about that nearly as much. Probably because it's a shorter schedule and it's a larger audience, it's a larger market out there. More people are seeing it, more people are talking about it. That's just the reality of the situation. And when you look at a place like the SEC, obviously it's the best conference in college football, so you're going to have an even bigger spotlight on certain things that happen. And let's not just look at one side of the coin here. I think field stormings are great. I think they're a part of what makes the sport great. I think it really ties into what I love about college athletics, which is just it feels so genuine. It doesn't feel plastic. It doesn't feel watered down. It feels like it's, when you look at the regional aspect of it, it makes it just feel so real. Whereas with the NFL, and get me wrong, I love some NFL football, and because it's literally the best quality football out there. It may not be as fun as college football, but it's definitely the most talent out there. It feels like a product. College football does not feel like a product. It feels like something that is more special than just your prepackaged ESPN, CBS Sports, shove football down your throat for the average American that doesn't understand what football is. With college football, it almost feels more niche, and because it has a younger audience, I feel like people are more captivated by the emotional aspect of college football because they're younger. I think that people lean into that. And some of us that stick around past, you know, the college age, you know, really do hold on to that. And so I think the college fan bases can be way more passionate and way more diehard than maybe some other sports out there. And when you look at things like penalizing them for storming the field and for, you know, getting out of your seat after the game ends and getting onto the field, there are dangerous things that can come with that. There are dangerous things that can come with storming the field. It can get people hurt. A lot of bad things can happen. We saw a player in this league punch somebody that had got onto the field, punch a woman, no less, after a game had ended. Tensions can rise, man. And if you see a big-time program, even a program that doesn't have, you know, a lot of outward pride in the public eye, that gets beat in a way that causes the opposing team to storm the field, there's going to be a lot of built-up emotion in that moment, and people can get hurt. There's no denying that. It happened last year. So I understand, because of security reasons, this is something that we have to address. And fines in the past haven't worked, and, you know, it's essentially been just kind of a slap on the wrist for certain teams. And I'll say this to answer his question. What are your thoughts on this development that could happen as early as this upcoming season? I love it when teams storm the field, not just for Kentucky, in any class of college football. I think it's great. I think it's fun. But we can't deny the fact that people need to be protected. And as a whole, I think it makes sense, but I still don't like it. Right? Because it's part of what makes college football special. So that's my thought on that, great Kentuckian. It's not a joke. I think that it's also interesting that Kentucky's Mitch Barnhart is one of the people that's been heading this conversation up. I believe Greg Byrne of Alabama has also been a part of this. At least that's what Pat Forty of Sports Illustrated reported. And, you know, Kentucky's one of the places that's leading the charge on this. I don't feel great about it, but I also understand why. So if it's implemented as early as this year, I get it, but I don't like it. I would like to see field stormings. If there's, and there's no way to go about a safe field storming, it's just an overflow of emotion. And I understand the potential dangers that come with that. So that's going to do it for today's episode of Locked On Kentucky. You can follow the show on Twitter at Locked On UK. You can follow me on Twitter at LanceDahl_. And you can follow the show over on Instagram. That is at Kentucky Podcast. If you have any questions, you can leave them down below or hit me on the socials. I will see you all tomorrow for another episode of Locked On Kentucky. Hope you guys have a great rest of your day, and God bless.